Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We will be here for the next hour talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. If you have a question for us, would like to comment on the show, or have a suggestion for a topic or guest you would like to hear about, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or follow us on the Walter Anderson Nursery main Facebook page. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Getting towards the end of July already. It's been a beautiful July.
It has been a mild July, relatively speaking.
Incredibly mild. Mm-hmm. And the numbers show it. We've had a very busy July. And I think as I recall, last year was pretty hot mm-hmm. in July. And I haven't even turned my air conditioner on yet.
I think we put it on once this year thus far. I don't like air conditioning.
Yeah, I have not turned it on at all. It's been quite nice. We do have classes today. In San Diego, it's going to be Brigitte from San Diego Seed Company is going to be doing a class on summer garden and seeding. That's going to be at 9 o'clock in the San Diego store. Make sure you get there early to get a good seat and a good parking space. That is a popular class. And in Poway at 9:30, another very popular class is going to be summer fruit tree pruning with Tyler Trimble. That's at 9:30. There again, get here. We have plenty of parking, but get here early to get a good seat because those classes do fill up. So those are our two classes for today.
You know, last week I did a class at the Point Loma store, and sitting there waiting for the class to start, very nice couple, and they said, "We don't think you look like Brigitte." And I said, that's a good thing. So they were a week early. And so I said, no, I'm sure that Brigitte will be next week. So make sure you come back.
Yeah. But, she will be there.
She does a great class.
She will be there. She does do a very good class.
That's right. The running competition between capacity is John Clements and Brigitte.
Yeah.
At the stores.
Yeah. And Mike Adkin.
And Mike. Oh, yeah. Good point. Yes.
And Mike Adkin.
And real quick, before we move on, I have a question for John, because we're going to do a summer fruit tree pruning class tomorrow here mm-hmm. in Poway. Are you a summer fruit tree pruning advocate?
I am. I still prune in the winter.
Oh,
but,
absolutely.
But right. To keep things in size, right. You know, to keep sizes down, I will do after the harvest of each tree. I'll just take them back a little bit, shape them up.
That's a Tom Spellman theory.
I was going to say, right? Tom Spellman who's actually going to be here next month.
He'll be here in August. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's one of his big theories. And one of his reasons for doing it is because nobody likes to go out in the cold, wet weather and work in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well do it when it's warm and sunny.
Well, and you can introduce some disease pathogens cutting in cold, wet weather too.
Oh,
with some trees.
Yeah, so. I think in fact, is it apricots and cherries
yes.
that they are recommended to do when it's warmer?
Right.
Correct.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So pruning class will be tomorrow. And just to save the date on coming up, 2 months from now, September 20th, the San Diego Master Gardeners are having their fall plant sale in Balboa Park on Patio B. That is going to be on September 20th. So if you want to go check out some interesting stuff, see some presentations from some very, very knowledgeable people, make a note on your calendar. September 20th is a Master Gardener fall plant sale in Balboa Park, Patio B in Casa del Prado.
So
if you want to go check that out. July has just been on top of the nice weather. It has just been absolutely crazy with milkweed. I have mm-hmm. not seen milkweed sales like we have had this summer since the pandemic. And it has just been insane is the only way mm-hmm. I can describe it. But we have sold thousands and thousands of milk. We can't buy enough milkweed to keep the store stocked.
I was going to say, sorry to interrupt, but yesterday, the only phone calls I received from whenever I answered the phone was, "Do you guys have milkweed? Did you get your milkweed shipment?" how much milkweed do you have? What sizes do you have? Everything was milkweed related on every phone call.
We have been scouring Southern California nurseries to find them. Our biggest suppliers are out. They're just said, we're done. We don't have any more coming. We're done for the season. We don't have any. So for those of you out there that are raising monarchs, try to keep an eye on the supply at wherever you're shopping, because it is going to get tight. It already is getting tight.
It is. And last week we had a couple customers said, that's fine, I'll just get some seeds. So we walked to the seed rack and there were no milkweed Asclepia seeds to be found on our shelf. I don't know if we've replenished since then, but there were none.
I would imagine we have, but I'd have to double check it. Yeah. And it does, that's something to keep in mind for next year. If you want to grow your own, they don't call it milkweed
that
for
weed
nothing.
Part, the weed part's important.
The weed part is important. It grows anywhere.
It's a rank grower. Yeah. I mean, it'll really grow fast.
We actually have one growing on the south face of the warehouse here in Poway. It's growing in the crack between the cement sidewalk and the cement block wall.
And it flowers every year.
And it flowers every year, and it grows every year, and it comes back every year. I don't know how it got there or whatever, but it's just amazing. And I remember before we opened the Poway store 30 plus years ago in San Diego, the tropical milkweed, it would just blow in from seed and sprout out in the bedding plant section. And it was literally just a weed. We didn't sell it. Nobody was buying
no
it.
Normal
it, it
person.
It was not a crop.
Right.
And now it's just crazy how many people are buying it. All kinds of milkweed. And one thing that was fortunate this year is we had a very, very good supply of the narrow leaf milkweed. In the past, it has been difficult to get, but this year, and I don't know if it was just because the growers anticipated that it was going to be a busy year for it or what, but we had a very good supply of it this year. Maybe not so much now, but earlier in the season we did.
Would you say now the reason it was hard to keep in stock was people came in and they only wanted the narrow leaf milkweed, the native, mm-hmm. they were very adverse to picking up the tropical. Mm. Although this year I don't sense the same amount of angst about getting the tropical. Have you guys seen that?
I have not seen that. And I don't know if that's just a change in the philosophy behind it or what, because all of the main articles that I had read about it from valid sources said the problem, if you could call it that, with the tropical milkweed was that it didn't go dormant in the wintertime. And as long as you cut it back in October, and because it didn't go dormant, it would harbor over the protozoa.
A pathogen that causes a disease.
Causes a disease that would harm the monarchs. And as long as you cut it back in October or November, then you're fine. That takes care of the problem. And I've mentioned this before. In one of the articles that I was reading, there was an entomologist talking about tropical milkweed, and he said, you know, there's parts of Texas that if the borderline was drawn 100 or 200 miles farther south, tropical milkweed would be a native. You know, the native, non-native, that's a line in the sand.
Right.
So,
or the granite, or
the Rio Grande, right. wherever it happens to be. So anyway, I personally think that if you follow the right protocols and you do what needs to be done, I don't think you're going to have any issues.
Well, I don't think so. In fact, shout out to one of my favorite clients, Julie, who this morning I was at her house and she had 4 monarch babies and she has little incubators. I mean, she's into this thing. And so she visits Walter Anderson's every week to buy more milkweed, and which is wonderful. But, you know, think of the broader implications for a lot of this. I think the fact that people are feeding monarchs so much locally, I think it actually has probably resulted in that disrupted migratory cycle and everything we hear so much about. Where, why do they want to go fly up to Monterey and live in a eucalyptus tree?
Yeah, or fly to Mexico.
When they're just happy as they can be right here.
That is one of the theories that I have seen some entomologists put forward, is that it's not so much the butterflies that are in danger, it's their migratory habits that mm-hmm. and they're not really in danger. They're changing.
Right.
And they said the monarchs are
staycation.
They are evolving.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they are adapting to the new reality. So.
Well, you know, I was at a client's place yesterday in Linda Vista, and this woman is just nuts about butterflies. And she doesn't have monarchs, but she has planted so much passiflora everywhere. Mm-hmm. And in her yard yesterday, I must have seen 100 Gulf fritillary butterflies, which mm-hmm. are sort of like a small, more narrow monarch. They're beautiful.
Yeah,
slightly different.
Yeah,
so, no, you know, I guess that's one thing to just pass on to people. It's not just the monarchs. If you plant passiflora, you'll have more Gulf fritillaries than you know what to do with. And also plant dill, cilantro,
parsley,
plant fennel, and you can get the swallowtails.
Yeah. Well, and citrus.
Citrus, sure.
They'll feed on citrus. And the nice thing about the swallowtail that feeds on citrus is it's not going to defoliate them.
Right.
You don't get huge infestations of those caterpillars. So you'll get, I don't think I've ever had more than two or three caterpillars mm-hmm. at a time on one particular citrus, and just let them go. Mm-hmm. Let them eat. They'll forage and eat, and they'll turn into an absolutely beautiful butterfly with minimal damage mm-hmm. to your citrus.
And that's one heck of a butterfly.
It really is.
They're so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. So yeah, the monarch craze has really gone crazy this year. And I've said this in the past, we didn't plant any milkweed this year because I'm trying to get rid of the taxon flies. We have a huge butterfly garden, which we see monarchs in feeding, but we did not put any milkweed in just because I don't, feeding on nectar, I should say. We see the butterflies feeding on nectar.
Not the larvae eating
leaves. We don't
have
larvae.
Right.
And I want to keep it that way for probably another year and see what happens. Just so I want that taxon.
But see,
taxon fly.
On the other hand, if you have that fly in your yard, you'll have fewer hornworms on your tomatoes.
That's true.
There are options.
It's a
great trade-off. Philosopher Thomas Sowell. There are no solutions, only trade-offs.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, we do have a butterfly garden, so we get the butterflies, mm-hmm.
which
really are the prettiest of
that's the prettiest part
of the life cycle. So.
Really agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you do have options. You do have options. Also, as far as the weather is concerned, having this great summer, garden production has been tremendous.
Off the charts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
It really has. We grew about 6 different tomatoes this year. I'm done with heirlooms. I'm done. I've tried, and they produce a good fruit, but you have to put for the same amount of work that you put into growing an heirloom, you could grow a modern hybrid and get excellent fruit and lots more of it in some cases less work. So it's a trade-off, and I think I'm going to trade off for the modern hybrids. So you've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back for Garden Talk. Here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We've been talking about summer gardening in harvest time. We didn't plant much this year we planted some tomatoes. We've been harvesting a lot of tomatoes and they've been really good. Planted one zucchini. We've gotten our money's worth out of the zucchini. It's still producing, but it's starting to get a little worn. So I was talking to Melanie about it this morning and replacing it this weekend, maybe with something else. She said, zucchini's super cheap and you can get it anywhere. So let's put something else in that you can't find it very often. So we're going to take a look at one of the other squashes, maybe a yellow crookneck or something like that, that will still produce pretty quickly and easily, but is just not as readily available. And Farmer Roy's a big advocate of that. So don't plant onions. Don't plant Don't plant easy. Don't plant easy
thing too.
Don't plant easy stuff. Plant the unusual things. Right. Plant the things that are different.
Sugar snap peas in the wintertime. You know, you can't buy those. I mean, it's so good.
Yeah, stuff that you just can't find. So that's what we're looking at. The one thing that we have had incredibly good success with this year, and I think it might be because I actually put an irrigation line over to it.
Wait a minute, go back. So water helps your plants.
Water.
Okay.
The giant leaf basil. That is a fantastic. I don't think I'm ever going to grow the regular basil again. It grows like crazy. It produces a tremendous amount of foliage. The flavor is outstanding, and it's very easy to grow. I planted four basil plants. I planted two of the large leaf and two of the regular, and the large leaf just completely outperformed the regular basil. Yeah. So
we plant ours between our tomatoes, and I mean we do the regular, the Genovese or the Genovese.
Yeah, Genovese. Yeah.
Or the Italian sweet, mm-hmm. and it is prolific. Mm. I don't do anything to it. I mean, the water goes on every third or fourth day, and that's it. We get tons and tons.
I haven't even had to pinch it back. I mean, it hasn't even gone to flower yet.
Well, that's good.
And
that's
it's probably getting close to 2 feet tall.
Nice.
And it's nice and full. I'm sold on it. I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Now, do you guys make pesto with your?
Capri will make some pesto.
Yeah, Melanie will.
Yeah. Melanie I love pesto.
And we cook with it in a lot of different dishes and throw it in salads. We have three different varieties of bush string beans in the garden. Nice. And they've been succession planting. So every night we can get a full colander full. We'll steam it and then make a salad with some of the tomatoes and the basil.
Melanie's really good. Melanie's been making sliced tomatoes with basil, outstanding.
Yep.
Really, really good.
Another thing, if part of your summer harvest includes carrots, I used to take the tops of the carrots and give it to the chickens. And then I was posting this one time and my friend Trish Watlington, who's a farmer and former restaurant owner, she said, "What are you doing wasting all those beautiful carrot greens?" I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Make that into pesto."
That's what you had mentioned one time. Yeah.
Oh, delicious.
I'm going to have to try that sometime.
Yeah. And I like to use walnuts typically instead of the pine nuts because they're cheaper, but I think they have a better flavor too. And walnut and carrot top pesto is just outrageously good.
I am actually going to make it.
I think your wife already did.
Oh, did she?
She's okay. Got it. I like to cook with the carrot tops in stews and soups. Mm. You just throw it in.
Just don't put them in the microwave.
Noted.
Yeah.
Oh.
Is that a problem you've had?
No kidding. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Is that from the heavy metals that they pull out of the soil?
I don't know what it is, but I believe if you put carrot greens in the microwave, they will spark.
I will.
Good.
Or you could go home and try it.
I'm going to try that. Yeah. See what happens.
You just have a fire extinguisher nearby.
Yeah. Prove me wrong.
Well,
we'll do it here though, because it's the microwave is much more accessible here. Should we need to throw it outside real quick?
Oh, that is true. That is true. Now, George, you were kind enough to bring in some fruit harvest that you have from some of your fruit trees today.
You opened before saying how, you know, we said it was a bountiful harvest this year. So the Gio and Mia, my wife, our orchard is just in incredible production this year, more than ever before. And we've been very blessed, and we've been freeze drying. We've been making preserves. We've been sharing.
Wow.
And just everything is growing really well. Mm. And I think, John, I mentioned to you offline, Capri wanted to rip out our spicy nectar. Last night we had harvested. We were slicing and getting ready to put more fruit in the freeze dryer. And the spicy nectar plum, we have one more harvest, I think, and we'll be done. But the spicy nectar plum, we were slicing it up and eating pieces of it that, you know, were too small to put on the tray. And Capri was just, "This is so good." And so this is a delicious piece of fruit. And I think I even mentioned this is John Clement's favorite piece of fruit, as mine as well. Anyway, Capri said, I said, "You know, last year you wanted me to rip this tree out and get rid of it." And she said, "I did. But I've come to, you know, I love it." But in fairness, it looked horrible last year. And last year was a really bad year for peach leaf curl in our orchard mm-hmm. on a number of different plants. And that one in particular, and Tom Spellman told me that that is very susceptible.
That's what I heard.
And it gets it badly, and it looked horrible, and it lost a lot of leaves and flowers and mm-hmm. fruit. And then the second thing that happens on nectarines and spicy nectar plum, the Western flower thrip, and you get all that scarring as mm-hmm. the fruit matures, mm-hmm. and it's just not attractive.
Right.
All that to say, last year she was willing to rip it out. This year, she's on board with keeping that thing because it is so delicious. So,
yeah, there was a fella talking smack about spicy nectar plum in my garden group. And I was thinking, shut up. I'm sorry. Shut up. That is my single favorite tree.
That's a good one.
If you taste that fruit, you'll know why. It is zingy and tangy and a little sour on the outside peel. And you get to the inside and it is sugar sweet. And that combination, oh my gosh. And I just, to me, it's worth the cat facing, which has good years and bad years. You know, welcome to being a farmer.
Yeah.
And this year, you have good years and you have bad years. This year was not as bad at all with regard to the scarring that takes place on the nectarines and the spicy nectar plum.
But trust me, taste that fruit, people. I still will stand by it. That's my single favorite tree. I think it's a gorgeous tree and probably one of the tastiest bits of fruit you'll ever taste in your entire life.
Melanie got some. She got some nectarines. I don't know what variety they were. She picked them up from the store. They were actually incredibly good nectarines. Mm. And she took some of them, and I guess it's about 6 or 7 years ago, we had been up at Dofo Winery up in Temecula. Actually, excellent winery. If you're ever up in Temecula and you're looking for a place to go, I would highly recommend Dofo, especially if you like motorcycles, because the family that owns it used to race motorcycles, and in their barrel room, the walls of the barrel room are lined with motorcycles. They're all hanging from the wall. I mean, they probably have a couple hundred motorcycles hanging on the wall. It's a pretty neat place, and they make some pretty good wine too. But we were up there several years ago, and they had late harvest Chardonnay available. And late harvest Chardonnay, if you've never had it, is actually more like a dessert wine mm-hmm. than it is a regular Chardonnay table wine. Because it's harvested so late, the sugars really concentrate and it's really sweet. Well, she poached the nectarines in that late harvest Chardonnay. It was outstanding. My. It was really, really good. So that's another one you can do. And this is a
Santa Rosa plum that was freeze dried. And the reason I say I think is we harvested a bunch and we put them up, but anything that's, you know, a little extra that won't fit into that particular put up, we put in jars and eat them over the next couple of days. So I think it's a Santa Rosa plum.
The freeze dried fruit is outstanding.
It's candy like.
It really is. Yeah. And it's super light. Mm-hmm. It's not sticky. I think I actually like it better than regular dried fruit.
Yeah,
It'll last a lot longer than
it's amazing.
Dried fruit.
You know what the texture reminds me of, and the airiness? It reminds me of Cheetos.
Oh, you know that is kind sure. That
you know, it's yeah. like so. Imagine
like air puffed,
like right. air puffed, where you maybe have this very light, fluffy texture and substance, but then you taste this pure essence of distilled fruit, and there's a like with this one, Ken, that you're about to taste
that tang at the end.
At the end. Yeah. People, I'm telling you, I wish we could have taste radio because these things are unbelievably good.
I am really surprised that nobody has marketed.
Well, I'm sure you can, and I'm sure there is. It might be a little pricey, but we've put up a lot this season because everything has been very productive. And you know, in the spirit of succession gardening, we've put fruit trees in that don't come all at once. So, you know, we've been eating peaches throughout the season, and we just got the last harvest of the Red Barrens, which you're eating.
Outstanding.
Those are really good.
And that's 5 or 6 different peach trees. So that's the last one. So we've had peaches from early till now, and now plums, we've gone through 2 plum trees, but we have 4 others that are producing. Oh, and so this is going to keep going, and it takes us about 44 to 48 hours to get the trays through the harvester and then put up.
And Red Baron,
I love
is a
peach.
Double benefit because mm-hmm. it's a flowering and fruiting,
yeah,
right.
peach tree.
It's a gorgeous. Well, they all flower.
Yeah,
but to your point, it's a beautiful flower. It's redder as opposed to the kind of soft pink that most peach trees are.
Yeah,
and it's a delicious piece of fruit. Even when it's, you know, my best friend from New York just harvested his peaches, and he was showing me pictures, and he called it dripping down your chin peaches. And Red Baron do that too. We were just drip down your chin, and they're delicious.
I call those eat over the sink fruits.
Without a doubt, or in the front yard.
You
don't go in the living room with those.
Yeah, right? That is an outstanding piece of fruit. You know, really
way of thinking about all these fruit trees, people are always behind the curve. You know, it's like people that want pumpkins, they're always thinking usually about September. I should plant some pumpkins. No, you need to plant pumpkins in May.
Yeah.
So when you're tasting all this wonderful summer fruit, be thinking January, show up and buy these trees when they're bare root, because they will establish so much better, so much faster, mature earlier, and you'll get the selection of so many varieties of fruit you're not going to find in a can.
And that's what I tell folks as well. You know, back to the onions, don't plant onions because you can buy them. The same thing with fruit trees. We have people come in and they want to buy a Granny Smith tree.
Yeah.
And you can buy Granny Smith apples at the store. Mm-hmm. You can't buy Gordon's or Lady Williams or King David apples at the store.
Or so, Sundowner. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, put those trees in that you can't get, like the Red Baron peach, which is different than the generic peach you might purchase in the store. Mm. Or, like you see right here on the table, some green. We also brought in some fresh green. Not we, I guess it's me, but the Gio and Mia orchards.
Yeah.
The green gauge plum and sweet treat pluary, a cross between a plum and a cherry, which is also, that's one of Capri's favorite pieces of fruit.
Mm. Yeah. We will have to try those. You know, speaking of onions real quick before we go to the break, I did find Welsh onion seed, which is one of the medieval,
that's right. Yeah.
Wow.
Medieval plants. And when we redid our planting area in the backyard, I set aside an area, and it's one that you just put it in and you leave them there, because you can harvest the greens. And then as you need onions, you can go and it's a bunching onion. You can pull some out, but you basically just leave them there and create a stand.
It's a perennial.
It's a perennial. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. During the break, George was kind enough to hand out some fruit for us to taste. And one of them that I have never tasted before was a pluary, and it's a cross between a plum and a cherry. It looks like either a small plum
or a giant cherry.
Incredibly large cherry. Very, very good. Very, very good quality fruit.
That one is
really
called a sweet treat.
Mm-hmm. Now, was that a Zager?
That's very sweet.
I think it was a Floyd Zager cross.
It is a Zager, yeah.
Yeah.
Aren't most of them Zagers?
Well, you know, almost everything, come to think of it. Yeah, he's gone now, but he was a real pioneer.
Yeah, he produced a lot of the really good modern intergeneric hybrids that are out. You know, when I was a kid, there were no intergenerics.
No.
None.
You're right.
It was peaches, plums, nectarines, apricots, and apples.
Yeah.
That was about it.
And now there's apriums, pluots, pluaries.
All kinds
of good stuff.
Next week I'll bring in, or the next time we record, I will bring in a candy heart pluary.
Oh, nice.
Just ripening right now.
Oh,
I've eaten that one before. It's very tasty.
Right. One of the other ones that George brought in, which you don't see very often, and they have been difficult to get over the past few years, going back to that, just a plain old plum, is the green gauge plum.
Yes.
Isn't that delicious?
One of my favorites. It's outstanding. The longer they're on the tree, the sweeter they get, to the point where it's almost like biting into a small water balloon full of sugar water. But they have that really tart, well, not really tart, but they have a tart skin to them.
Right.
So it's a nice combination.
It's and a good they, balance.
They produce like crazy.
I mean, it's a pretty tree too.
It's a really nice tree. One full size tree will produce more than a single family can normally eat on their own. Yeah. My grandparents had one in their yard, and I remember in the summertime just eating those things till I would get sick because they had so many of them, and it And if you thinned them a little bit, then the fruit just got even bigger.
Right.
Right.
It's a precocious tree too, because this is its first full year in the ground.
And wow.
And I mean, we didn't get 6 or 7 bushels, but we got a lot of fruit off of it in the first year.
Man,
you know, thinking about nurseries that have gone out of business and are gone. I think, if I remember correctly, most of the green gauge plums were coming from L.E. Cook.
Probably.
And now that L.E. Cook has gone, like the Weeping Tea's mulberry, that was really one of the trees they specialized in. And so support your local independent nursery, support the wholesalers, because, you know, we think about it, oh, another nursery gone. Well, one of the reasons you're not seeing these pieces of fruit is because they're gone.
That and the value of the land that they're on.
And the land.
Yeah.
Well, I purchased this green gauge plum at Walter Anderson Nursery in Poway during bare root season.
Just this last year?
Last year.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I'm hoping we're going to have some again this year. Nice. I might actually put one in this year. It's a really good, and it's a beautiful tree in the springtime when they start to flower. It's white flower, but I mean, they're just covered with.
They are.
Covered with flowers.
And the only issue I've had with any of my plum trees, and oddly enough, not the hybrids, so not the sweet tree pluary or the pluots, have been aphids on the tips. They get a lot of aphids and all the foliage starts to deform and crinkle up, and then the ants are making their path. But other than that, they have been incredibly pest-free.
They're very pest-free. They're pretty disease-free. I think the only disease that I can think of that might get, that you might see from time to time, is I think they can be susceptible to shot hole fungus.
They can be. And then I have had in the past brown rot occasionally.
Okay.
But if you are meticulous about your winter care, you can hit it with some daconil or some copper and it'll take care of it.
Just be vigilant.
Yeah, just be good about your winter care.
Yeah, there is a midge that will, like the rose slug, I can't.
Sawfly?
Sawfly.
Get a sawfly.
That can be a problem with your red leaf plums too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's, you know, that's an interesting tree, the red leaf plum, because those were incredibly popular for a long, long time. They have fallen out of favor to some extent. We still carry them.
Yeah.
And it's a nice medium sized tree.
Mm-hmm. But they're short lived.
They don't live long. Yeah. No. They only live about
15 years.
15 years. I think they like a little more chill than we can give them too. When I was up in Central Coast recently, they just look gorgeous up there.
Okay.
And down here they struggle. And the other issue, and they're actually on my don't plant list anymore, is that they do suffer badly from ambrosia beetles. For us, it's the Kuroshio shot hole borer. Up north, like up at the Huntington and sort of Pasadena area, they get the polyphagus shot hole borer. And they seem to really like that tree.
When I built the house, I had a big one in the front yard next to the driveway, and it was there for years. Never had a problem with borers. Did have some sawfly issues a couple of times during the season. But it just wore out. But it was a beautiful tree. Every springtime, it was just fully covered in flowers. Melanie didn't particularly care for it because when it went dormant, all the dropped foliage blew into the garage.
Oh. So
that was an issue. But my kids loved it because people don't realize those red leaf plums will produce fruit. Mm-hmm.
And it's edible.
It's technically, but my kids loved them because they were so sour. They would climb into the tree to get those. And it's a little teeny plum, about the size of a quarter, maybe a half dollar at the most.
Well, if people like the purple leaf aspect of the plum, but want a fruiting variety, there is a variety called Hollywood. That's a good variety for our area. I think it's like 350 chill hours or so. But I've seen it available. I think Dave Wilson probably does have it. So Hollywood plum is a nice alternative.
Mm-hmm. Well, I misread you, John. I thought when you said if you like the red leaf, you were going to go to the spicy nectar plum, which has a reddish leaf.
It does.
And I thought that's where you were going to go.
Purple leaf, yeah.
And it keeps that color.
Yeah, it does.
Whereas a lot of peaches and nectarines, the foliage will come out kind of purple or bronze. But then it fades to green as it matures. You know, going back to the L.E. Cook thing, you know, another thing that's lost now that L.E. Cook is gone is the Cook's purple wisteria.
Yes.
Which was probably one of the probably one of the nicest wisterias that was on the market, and it was incredibly dark purple. But I don't think anybody else is growing it. Ellie Cook went from, they went from being a huge bare root supplier, and then they decided they were going to grow sleeves, and now they're just gone now. They decided the sleeve thing wasn't working out, so they're not going to do it. The other company that we used to get bare root fruit trees from way back when, Orange County Nursery.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. They used to grow, they used to grow a lot of bare root fruit trees back a long time ago. And there was another big tree grower up in Orange County before it exploded population wise. Keyline Wilcox was a major tree grower.
Fruit tree? Fruit tree?
No, just ornamental.
Just ornamental.
But yeah, they were at the Pacific Orchard Show every year. Keyline Wilcox was just some absolutely beautiful specimen trees. But yeah, that's all gone by the wayside. Just like the Japanese gardens, the deer farm. Did you ever go there?
Right. When you were a kid? In Buena Park.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
In Buena Park.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, my grandparents took me up there one time when I was a kid, and as I remember, it was just an absolutely beautiful place. But the only thing I wanted to do was play those stupid pachinko machines that they had.
I remember those.
But I couldn't have been more than six or seven. Some organization was doing a bus tour from San Diego up there, and so they took me up there for the day. It was really quite nice.
Yeah, it was a really neat place.
Yeah, there was some neat stuff up there. The Lion Country Safari
in Orange County, there used to be buffalo roaming the hills up in Newport Beach.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Oh, late 50s, very early 60s. And in fact, if you go in Newport Beach from Fashion Island,
just before you were born,
the week before.
Yes.
There is actually a street there called Bison, with a big bronze bison, I guess buffalo, there. And it just kind of harkens back to the day when there were bison running over those hills.
That is amazing, and absolutely amazing. Some really neat history. Along with the fruit production and all the stuff that's going on in your garden, there's pests and diseases that are out there that are starting to show their ugly heads. I know I've had some mildew show up in some of my plantings. My roses, for whatever reason, are immune to it this year. They look absolutely amazing. My zucchini, which I had been bragging about, had been doing so well, has now
succumbed to the
dreaded mildew. So we are starting to see some of that. And you had mentioned whitefly.
We've had a number of guests come in with whitefly issues. We haven't had them at our house of any note, but you know, it's common on hibiscus in particular.
Right. Giant whitefly is a real problem on the hibiscus, but it makes clients totally freak out when we do it. But I will tell them what we need to do is thin this hibiscus, because the biggest issues with the giant whitefly is if it's in the shade and if it doesn't get air circulation. Yep. So give the hibiscus a major haircut. Go right down to almost skeleton, and then let it grow back. And I'll guarantee you, your giant whitefly problems go away. And then feed it, and you'll have the tree bloom again, and you will not have the giant whitefly. So it's short-term pain for long-term gain.
The other thing that will help too is mulching with worm castings.
Worm castings, yep.
I've had great results in the worm castings. They yep. don't like it.
It has something to do with the chitin in the makeup of the exoskeleton of the fly and what's in the soil or the worm castings, but it works well, and I've done it with great success. Yeah.
You know, I have not had a bad whitefly infestation in my yard since I got rid of my Anisodontia.
Oh, really?
What is an Anisodontia?
It's a very small mallow. It's a small leaf mallow. Relatively drought tolerant. We had one on our patio in a pot, and that thing was a whitefly magnet. And we got rid of that. I haven't had white flies in my yard in years.
And pest control on that can be difficult.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can.
And we don't have systemics for it.
Right? No, right. Not anymore.
And even with horticulture oil, it's tough with the giant white fly because they sort of have this waxy substance that just repels everything.
Yeah. You almost have to put a surfactant in it to take control.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with John Clements and George Allman. And we've been talking about some of the pests that have been showing up in your yard this time of the year or your landscaping. Whitefly was one. Oh, one of the other things that I wanted to mention as far as whitefly is concerned that really can help get them under control is cut the interval on your spray down to 5 days from the typical seven. Because it's much better at breaking the life cycle. At 7 days,
they repopulate pretty quickly
and you just can't get ahead of them. But if you cut it down just to 5 days, that will help a lot. And the lack of systemics, there is only one systemic on the market anymore. And I think that's the BioAdvance Frozen Flower. I don't think anybody else has come up with one yet.
But it's not the same one. Yeah, and I don't think it's listed for whitefly. If you read the label as far as insects, I'll double check that, but I don't think it's listed.
Yeah, and it does say rose and flower, but it is listed. Right. There are a number of other plants that are listed besides roses on the label. But yeah, the active ingredient in that is acephate, which is an excellent systemic. I don't know it's any worse or any better than the one that they got rid of, but it is what it is.
So. Well, back in the day, when I was in the nursery business and spraying things, acephate was the biggest or the active ingredient in orthene that we would use as a liquid. And it smelled so bad.
It's terrible.
It's horrible smell.
It's worse than malathion.
Oh, yeah. 10 times worse.
Mm-hmm. But we used to sell it as a wettable powder because that was, and the main reason why we sold it as a wettable powder was because you could use it on staghorns because the carrier is water.
Right.
It was water-based. And that was one of the my grandfather always liked cook malathion because cook didn't have any petroleum emulsifiers. It was water-based. So you could use it on everything. But that's all.
Yeah.
All long gone. One of the other things that showed up, Adams, one of our managers here in the Poway store, he lives up in Ramona. He has started to see some red hump caterpillars showing up.
Right.
In his yard.
And that will, you know, I mentioned earlier the plum trees, but they will get on plum. I've had to deal with them on plum trees and they will decimate liquid amber.
Yeah, liquid amber. The other thing, they will, in a couple of days sometimes, I've seen them totally defoliate a tree and that's cerces. So
your red buds,
you know, the forest pansy and the green ones, occidentalis, they will strip every leaf in about 2 days.
Now, that one's not a beautiful butterfly.
No,
it
isn't.
It's a tiny little moth.
It's a moth?
Yeah, it looks like a large fly with extra big wings or something.
Oh, that doesn't sound attractive.
One thing we do with clients, if they have red buds at all, I check them every week that we're there because it doesn't take any time for those to completely be ruined.
Now, BT will knock those down.
Yeah, BT
quickly.
Will work. Yep.
I would imagine spinosad would
and spinosad
does
too.
Work. I had an infestation on one of the trees, I just hit it with spinosad because I had it and I didn't have any BT available. But I will caution, and we do it all the time, if you use spinosad, different crops have different periods when you can eat them.
Right.
Yeah.
Some are 7 days, some are three, some are 60, like in the case of asparagus. So you have to read the label for each thing that you spray.
I don't understand that asparagus thing. No. It makes no sense to me at all. There's got to be a reason, but I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
Out of all the pesticides that are on the market, especially ones that you can use on edibles, I have never seen one that is so all over the board.
Peaches might, and nectarines might be set. Don't quote me, read the label, it is the law, but might be seven and the plum tree is 14 or vice versa.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, why?
It's it's all over the place.
Right.
So yeah, check the label, especially on spinosad, because it is the craziest one.
Is it effective?
Oh,
it does work.
It works very
excellent.
Well.
Yeah, in fact, it's a lot faster for effectivity than using BT.
Correct.
Or the red hump caterpillars.
You know what I have not had an issue with this year?
Citrus leaf miner.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're right.
I have had none.
I haven't seen any yet.
And it's late.
It's
very late for citrus leaf miner, but yeah, all my citrus are doing very, very well. And I have not seen it.
Knock on wood, please. Yeah.
Next weekend, they're going to be trash. But
well, it's because you just jinxed it.
I know. I ruined it for everybody. So,
but you're right. It's been a very interesting year. Roses are doing superbly. I haven't seen any citrus leaf miner. It's just weird. You know, things are cyclical in nature.
Yeah.
Highs and lows.
Yeah. One of the other things that we've had a few people come in with it still, and unfortunately it can be a big problem, is the black fig fly.
Yeah.
And if you have fig trees, it can be the...
It can break your heart.
It can break your heart. It can be the bane of your existence. And unfortunately, if you've got black fig flies, there's nothing you can do. I mean, George, you checked.
I will read you exactly what it says from the University of California Agriculture and Natural Resources. There are currently no chemical controls registered specifically for this pest on California fig.
Oh.
And it's heartbreaking. I know that, you know, in the past, I would eat, I don't know, 20 figs while I'm harvesting figs just because they're there. You just eat them. And now I bring everyone in and cut them in quarters and wait for something to move. Mm. I mean, if you don't see an obvious hole, okay, are there larvae in here?
Well, the other thing that happens too is the fruit will drop too.
It will drop. Right. Yeah. Typically you will not have the fly if it's still on the tree. It falls and doesn't mature.
Mm-hmm.
But I still check out of an abundance of caution or abundance of fear. I don't know what's the correct term.
That was the big question. Are figs even vegan?
Oh.
If they're fertilized by a wasp that never gets out, there's technically an animal inside of it. So for those of you that are vegan, you might want to do some soul searching on that one before you eat a fig the next time.
Well, I was out with friends and I really love octopus. Charred octopus is just one of the sweetest things in life to me. And they said, don't you know that an octopus is a sentient creature? How can you eat that? And I said, if that octopus sat in a chair and spoke to me, I'd still eat it.
my youngest son is a big octopus. I'll eat it when it's available from time to time. It's not something I go out of my way to get, but it is good.
It should be.
It is very good. Another pest that, I've seen running around in my yard, although I haven't seen them lately, is voles.
Mm.
And we had a few in the backyard and out along our back fence. I have one big clump of Wheeler's dwarf pittosporum, and then there's a kind of a flagstone area, flat area, and then there's another planter on the other side that has some shrubs and ground cover in it. And when we'd sit outside on the patio at night having dinner, we would, for whatever reason, they would run back and forth between those. But we haven't seen them lately, so we're not sure if...
You know why? Here's my philosophy.
What's it?
There was UC Davis had an article back in December, this past December, 24, about carnivorous squirrels documented in California. Mm. And it was the first evidence of ground squirrels that were hunting and eating voles in the Bay Area.
Wow.
But I'm figuring if they're eating them up there, they might be eating them.
I have not seen any squirrels in my yard. That's one thing that we don't have.
You're a lucky man.
Boy, you're lucky. Ground squirrels are vicious little buggers.
And it's crazy because we have a big green belt bank behind our house that drops down to the condos behind us. And I've never seen a squirrel there. Even on our trail cams, we haven't caught any squirrels. Caught kangaroo rats, but I've never caught a squirrel.
Well, you won't on dates. I mean, they're daytime, so
it's a motion camera, so they go 24 hours a day. But if we walk down to the Vaughns from our house, and we have to walk through a pretty big park in Scripps Ranch, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
They're all over the place. But for whatever reason, they have not come into our neighborhood.
They are the bane that, you know, we were talking about how great our fruit is this year.
Mm-hmm.
They are the biggest problem we have, more so than birds or anything else.
Well, I had ground squirrels. I lived on Tecolote Canyon, and they would eat particularly my cocktail grapefruit. And they would eat every single leaf off of that grapefruit and sit and just chew it like beavers. And I couldn't stop them, you know, and at the Botanic Garden, we had huge issues. They would actually eat young plants and mow them down. And I finally had a friend at the Huntington and they use a falconer. And at the Huntington, they use a falconer. And the guy that's the falconer also works for LAX because it keeps birds out of the airplane. So they let the falcons work. And I said, well, can you come down to the botanic garden and help me control some pests? And he said, oh, sure, we can do that. And he said, how many rabbits do you have a problem with? And I said, well, it's not really rabbits. We do have rabbits, but I'm having a huge ground squirrel problem. And he said, no, 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 no. We don't let the falcons go after the squirrels. And I said, why? He said, they bite the toes off my birds.
Really?
He said that ground squirrels are pound for pound like the toughest creature on the planet. So now that I'm hearing about carnivorous ground squirrels, I'm just thinking, I'm scared.
The apocalypse is next.
The apocalypse is next.
The squirrel apocalypse.
Well, I've seen somebody had posted something that said, if you want to go to the park and not have any small dogs, just walk into the park wearing a falconer's glove and look into the air.
But, you know, you mentioned earlier that you haven't seen gophers, Ken, and the same thing at our place. You know, we get gophers, obviously, but mm-hmm. it has not been as bad as past. I'm not seeing mounds everywhere. Mm. And I am mildly curious as to whether our squirrels have been taking care of the
Well, that's
problem.
Interesting. Yep. Well, we do have instances, there are occurrences of weasels around.
True.
In Encinitas, we had weasels. I've seen them in Ramona. And they are carnivorous. So
we had them in PQ, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
I had one in our yard.
Weasels.
You'd find weasels, California wild weasel. I would find pieces of rat.
Oh, gosh.
Around our backyard. And then one of my neighbors came by and said, did you guys get a pet weasel?
Oh,
I said, a what?
Wow.
I swear I thought I saw a weasel as I was driving by looking at down your gate. We had a metal gate. I thought I saw a weasel down the side of your yard. I said, no, we don't have a weasel. And then I started finding pieces and did some research and assuming that's what was taking place.
Very interesting. Don't forget today we have garden classes in San Diego at 9 o'clock. It's going to be Brigitte from San Diego Seed Company, and she's going to be talking about summer gardening and seeding. At 9:30 in the Poway store, it's going to be summer fruit tree pruning with Tyler. Also mark your calendar September 20th, a little ways away, but never hurts to put it on the calendar early. Master Gardener plant sale in Balboa Park on Patio B. That is going to be on September 20th. Be sure to join us next week, next Saturday at 6 o'clock. And our special guest is going to be Greg Opkenorth from Grubb and Nadler Nurseries here in one of the better nurseries, I would say. That's out
wholesaler,
there right now.
Yeah.
One of the wholesalers.
They have great plants.
Fantastic stuff.
And John, you said he's a palm tree expert?
Oh, yeah. He's one of the best palm tree experts
lots
in town,
lots of questions
too.
For him.
Yeah.
We will have lots of questions and some interesting discussion. You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will see you next Saturday.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.